When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Brought to my attention today that Travis is a finalist for the Walter Camp Player of the Year, Maxwell Player of the Year, Veterinary Defense Player of the Year, Blinnikov Best Receiver, regardless of position, and was snubbed by the Thorpe. How? How is Travis Hunter snubbed by the Jim Thorpe Award?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Tell you something, you know, they are not going to, he is not going to be snubbed by the Heisman. He is the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman Trophy on Saturday. That's the baby. That's the granddaddy of them
all. It is.
That's the best.
It's a fair question,
that
though.
That is the best one. I, you know, listen, he's the best player in college football, and it's not even close.
I think so because of the way that he does
it. Two things.
On both sides of the ball. Yes. He's elite as a cornerback. He's elite as a wide receiver. There will be considerable debate over what he will do best at the next level. I kind of like him as a cornerback, to be honest with you.
Oh, he's a corner.
Yeah.
He's a corner at the next level.
But I think he may want to play wide receiver.
You could use packages for him, but I don't think at the next level anybody can play both sides of the ball.
What's harder to find?
I think a corner is harder to find than a wide receiver.
I agree with that. I think some offensive guys might quibble.
Well, let him quibble. You give him a series of plays, you give him a little package, and you could use him on that side of the ball. But let's be honest about it. He's an elite corner.
He's an elite corner, which makes the Jim Thorpe snub a little bit harder to understand.
Yeah, I agree.
Not quite sure about that. Do you think that Travis Hunter, this doesn't matter in the context of the Heisman Trophy ceremony, but do you think he's going to be the number one overall pick?
I would say
as a cornerback.
Likely as a corner. I think he's probably, you know, here's the problem. You know, Shedeur Sanders could go ahead of his teammate. And that's because the need at the quarterback position might be greater.
The way it's valued in the NFL.
Value of it in the NFL.
Yeah, I get that. I just don't know that as a cornerback, you don't see cornerbacks drafted first overall. Mm-hmm. Somebody will talk themselves into dropping him for whatever reason.
Yep.
I do wonder if there's a team out there that would consider or entertain the possibility of him playing both ways, in the NFL.
I don't think you can do that. I think what you're doing if you do that is you're making it more likely that he is injured.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only is it difficult to put in that many plays on both sides of the ball, but you're also going to be taking a lot of hits as a receiver.
You're also making it more likely that you're going to be having an explosive offense.
But, I mean, I would, like I said, put in a series of plays.
Yeah.
Put in a package of plays.
So that is using him on offense.
I would, it is conceivable. I would definitely use him on offense. I'm saying I don't think that you can use him for more than 10, 12 plays.
He's not going to play 90% of the snaps in the NFL like he is now. No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I do think it might be in the best interest of whatever team is lucky enough to get him on the net in the NFL to have a package of plays where he's on the field, let's say, one out of every four snaps.
Yeah.
One out of every five.
So
20 snaps a game.
So I obviously covered the Bears for a number of years. Fred Mitchell was in here.
I remember that.
Giving away. Thank you, buddy. We did it together. Fred Mitchell was in here giving away the Fred Mitchell Award.
Yeah, sorry to miss that.
Yeah, it was great, and it was great to talk to Fred. And when we during the breaks, we were kind of talking about when the Bears drafted Rashawn Salaam. Mm-hmm. You remember Rashawn Salaam, the late running back from Colorado, and he was the only ever Heisman-winning running back at Colorado. And this will be the Travis Hunter will be the next one, but. But when they drafted Rashawn Salaam, we were talking to him, and you know his father had played in the league, and then I believe he was he changed his name. He's Sultan Salaam, I think, is his name now, but I forget what his name when it was like he had like a fairly familiar name to people, and so we had Rashawn on the conference call, and I said to Rashawn Salaam, I said, "Hey, Rashawn, we understand there's an interesting story about your religion." And he said, "I'm a Muslim." And that was the end of the conversation. So, you know, the conference call's over and where I'll go back to our stuff. And then Fred says, "Hey, Rashawn, can you tell us a funny story about your religion?" As if that's what my question was. And everybody had a big laugh. And we were kind of recanting that, or recalling that moment. And we had a good laugh about it between breaks. But Rashawn Salaam was one of the all-time, like, sad stories, right?
The last Heisman Trophy winner from Colorado.
And the reason I bring it up is because one day in the locker room, I went over to him. He was a quiet guy, and he had talked about, you know, the difficulties he had. He had a lot of injuries, et cetera. But I went over to him, and I sat down with him in the locker room, as we did. And I said, "Hey, you got to vote for the Heisman, right? Who are you going to vote this year for the Heisman?" And I ended up writing a story about it, which got national attention. But he said, "There is a dark side to the Heisman, that you win the Heisman Trophy and you get all this attention and your college career is basically over and you have to go pro and they don't let you finish your career." And it was like his experience. It was one of the worst things that had ever happened to him was winning the Heisman, as weird as that sounds.
I mean,
it was a really sad story.
That was his experience, though.
That was his experience. I'm not saying it's everyone's experience.
Yeah, and he had some issues that he dealt with as an NFL player that were unfortunate.
Yes.
And certainly.
But I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
He felt that he was robbed of his college life, career, teammates, because he had to come out basically.
I hope that you've talked
award.
To other Heisman Trophy winners who have had different experiences.
No. Listen, it's one of the great.
Because, like, Tim Brown
is something you remember forever. Tim Brown's a wonderful cat.
He's a guy that probably would tell you how important it was. He was a Heisman winner on a pretty bad Notre Dame team.
Yes.
In the last year, 1987.
And there's plenty of good stories about it, but as you say, I can't ever help but think about Rashawn Salaam at this time of year and the way that he felt the Heisman forced him out of college, forced him into a situation that he didn't want to go to where, you know, he felt like, you know, he would have had a better time getting through school than coming into the NFL and not kind of, he was very young. He was very young too. And he had played, what was it, like eight-a-side football or something?
Yeah, it was something.
I'm just saying he wasn't used to.
Well, let's hope that Travis Hunter looks at it as a boon, not a burden.
Yeah.
And so he takes
let's hope
off
Heisman
the next level.
Career is a lot better.
Yeah, I hope that would be the case.
Just made me think of Rashawn Salaam, and it always does.
Okay.
It does.
I know. I understand that.
Of that conversation.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. Saturday night, it'll be four finalists, and the last eight finalists over the last 2 years, this is something that reflects the changing way of college football.
Yes.
Six of the last eight finalists have been transfers.
Yes.
And so, including Travis Hunter, who came to Colorado, it was his second stop. And you see other guys. He followed Deion Sanders from Jackson State.
Yes.
And he made it worthwhile because of the kind of season he's had and the kind of opportunities now he's afforded after winning the Heisman. So this is a tremendous player. but this does speak to what Bill Belichick will be dealing with. The transfer portal era has arrived, and to get elite players, you're not necessarily this focus on what Bill Belichick's going to do and going into the living rooms and recruiting. That's not really the thing. That's not really the game as much as it is mining the transfer portal and understanding NIL and how to line up big spending and having the $20 million payroll that Ohio State and Texas have and being able to match and compete with that. That's today's college football.
This will be the third Heisman winner who is a transfer because Caleb Williams started at Oklahoma. We know that Jaden Hunter transferred into Washington from
Jaden Daniels. Arizona State. Yeah.
Yes.
And he transferred
to LSU. Yes. LSU, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got, obviously, now you'll have Hunter. So not only six of the eight, and it is, that speaks volumes itself. You know, the only one that isn't a transfer is the running back from BYU. Would you, as a Heisman voter, be more likely to vote for a guy who didn't transfer? I don't think it should matter.
It doesn't matter to me. I don't vote in a Heisman any year. I had a vote for years. I kind of miss voting for the Heisman, actually. But it never really had any impact on the outcome.
But do you think we'll have another Heisman winner that isn't a transfer?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
I think it could be turned for good now.
But I think you're talking about guys like you, who's a running back, for instance. I think running backs seldom win anymore, but you could envision a guy going to a big program and being developed and nurtured. And what if Arch Manning wins next year? You know, at Texas, that's going to be somebody who breaks the cycle or the trend. It's a fair question, and I think because of the way things are going, it might be the exception to the rule. The rule might become transfers win the Heisman. That's the way you do it. You go somewhere, you get developed, you transfer somewhere where you blow up.
What if it's Bryce Underwood? Would you consider him?
I think Bryce Underwood is a $10 million investment by the University of Michigan,
exactly.
And it will be a good first stop.
Yeah. You think that's a first stop?
I don't.
Wow.
I don't know how you can. If you were to bet, knowing nothing about his connection to the program or Sharon Moore or any of those things, if you were to bet, will Bryce Underwood finish his college career at Michigan or elsewhere? Would you take the field or Michigan?
I would probably take Michigan because they gave him $10 million.
I would take the field.
That's so much money. Doesn't that buy your loyalty for 4 years?
It's an 18-year-old kid. This is the problem with giving 18-year-old kids $10 million. Really, is he bound by the language in his college scholarship? It's year to year, isn't it?
I'm asking you, is the $10 million year to year? Does he get the $10 million? Let's say he decides that, you know, it's year two. They're not playing me enough.
I don't think it's 10 years over. I don't think it's $10 million over 4 years.
Okay,
I think
so
it's ten million flat to show up.
Okay,
to win a national championship in 2025.
Then if that's the case, then maybe he can get another five by transferring. You know, who's the kid from? He's up for the
toughest recruiting project. Sometimes is recruiting and retaining your own players.
Who's the kid from Oregon? The quarterback,
Dylan Gabriel.
Started out at Central Florida, transferred to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I believe at some point or other made a commitment to UCLA, and then wound up going to Oregon.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
The Oregon Trail.
That's a lot of stops. That's
a lot
more
of stops.
Than two. That's three stops.
That's Lewis and Clark.
And you were thinking,
okay.
It took as long for Lewis and Clark.
So I think that
that's beautiful.
It's on the way.
Funny.
So now he's at the Heisman Trophy ceremony.
Yeah.
It paid off. The way we lose our minds, not us necessarily, but the way people lose their minds over recruiting, they should learn how to not do that, because the recruiting class that people just signed last week or 10 days ago, it's not going to look the same in your roster in 2 or 3 years.
He, I believe, makes $1.6 million at Oregon.
Yep.
So
NIL.
He was paid, 1.6 NIL for this year.
Yep. And he won't make that next year in the NFL.
No.
He may get a signing bonus that will exceed that.
Right.
But his salary will be less than that considerably, because he'll be on a rookie contract. And these guys going into the NFL will be much different.
What
somehow Clint Ewers, Texas quarterback,
Quinn Ewers.
Quinn?
He's
got a $4 million a year offer from a Big Ten team.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thinking about foregoing the draft. He's got one more year of eligibility, I guess. and he's going to leave Texas.
Yes.
And he's going to go to a Big Ten team.
Right.
Earn $4 million and kind of reposition himself as the best.
If I were Quinn Ewers' parent, I would say that's a good thing to do, young man. Thank you, son. Go to the Big Ten.
Don't you think that's interesting, though?
It's fascinating.
Care to speculate?
Well,
in terms of a Big Ten program?
Who's the Big Ten team offering him $4
million? Ohio State. Ohio State.
Yeah, okay.
What other Big Ten program has $4 million?
Well,
Ryan Day is coming back to coach Ohio State.
I saw that yesterday. The AD said absolutely right.
And Ohio State is in the market for a quarterback now, right? Will Howard's gone. Is that correct? Or even if not, he didn't beat Michigan, so he's gone.
He should be gone, yeah.
So I think that would be the thing.
That is wild. That is wild if it is. And I know it's the transfer portal and NIL, and it's a new
era. I'm totally speculating, though. You asked me for a name.
You're just making it up. But
I'm not making it up. I'm speculating.
No, you're just pulling that one out of a certain orifice that isn't usually associated with.
Did you text with his agent, David?
Well, quick, Quinn already went to Ohio State, too. He started his college career at Ohio State, then went to Texas.
Right.
So it'd be interesting if he comes back.
He's familiar with how to get to campus. I don't know.
Have Sark teach him.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not then, Ohio State.
But I'm just saying, like whatever the idea that you are better off making more money in college than going to the NFL blows my mind because. Oh, that NFL money will always be there. It's not like start the clock on your college.
Hey.
It's like it might be a backup in the NFL. So you get $4 million, you could win a title,
and then maybe
you get a better deal once you get to the NFL. That just blows my mind.
Well, it's the state of college football, and it's going to be challenging the NFL as far as appeal. And for coaches and players, we just saw a coach pick college football over the NFL. Thank you, Bill Belichick.
Isn't there now going to be a salary cap?
They're talking about regulating
college,
it.
Right? I thought they were talking about $20 million per program or something.
Okay, let's see them enforce it. I mean, when are they going to implement it? They're talking about it, but until they do, all this stuff is on the table.
So what happens? If you get to a point where you have a salary cap, do teams start cheating again?
Yeah.
Is there more money under the... Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Because how do you regulate that?
I don't know how you
regulate it. You open Pandora's box.
Yeah, you've already done that.
You're not going to be able to shut it. I don't really think. All right, so the Heisman is Saturday night.
Yes.
Travis Hunter is going to win it, and we all will be happy about that because I think he's deserving.
Great player.
Two other little things before we move on because we had Chris Getz coming up in a few minutes.
Yes.
So Frankie Naser. For the Blackhawks, the prospect at Rockford is coming up, according to
Michigan
Frank Saravalli.
Man.
Yes. Michigan man. Speaking of Michigan, Frankie Naser coming up with the Blackhawks. Anders Sorensen becomes a coach a little over a week ago. All of a sudden, Kevin Korchinski, he's in a Blackhawks sweater.
That's good.
Now Frankie Naser is here to provide some offense. He had 24 points in 21 games at Rockford, so he's here to help Connor Bedard kind of realize that potential.
Been waiting on him.
And the other thing I wanted to really quickly touch on, we didn't talk about... That 49er thing last night really bugged me. You had a player that refused to go into the game, DeAndre Campbell.
Yep.
And how does that happen in the NFL?
Ask Nate Davis.
Well, Nate Davis refused to suit up.
Yeah.
Or did he refuse to go in?
I don't know.
But he was an not unwilling participant.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty lame. He's got to be cut today, right?
You know, they need linebackers. Maybe they need to coax him. Maybe he needs NIL money.
He should have stayed in college football a little longer.
Give him a bonus. Yeah,
made a good living.
I can't imagine anyone being happy with that going on. I thought George Kittle was great when they asked him about it. And, you know, it's just unfortunate. All right, we got Chris Getz next. We'll get a chance to talk to the man with the plan. For the Chicago White Sox, it's Mully and Haw on the Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning
way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
I was at the cages like normal and was, yeah, I got hit up and was told that a unique situation presented itself and that Red Sox are going to make a move for Crochet. Yeah, I'm just excited.
So I'm driving to go train actually, and it's about 2-3 o'clock, and I'm just, it's like a normal everyday for me. And I get a phone call and I don't know what it's about. And pretty much they let me know I got traded. And at first it was a complete shock just because I didn't see it coming. And as it settled in, you know, like I would say the main emotions I felt was just being surprised and being excited for this opportunity.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Those are your two newest White Sox. You heard there from Braden Montgomery, the outfielder that came over from Boston. And, of course, Kyle Teal was on yesterday with...
impressive young man.
Yeah, Dan and Marshall yeah. Harris on the midday show. Very impressive young guy. And we are delighted to welcome in another impressive young man. He's Chris Getz, the White Sox general manager. He joins us now on the Aturo Hotline, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Chris, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Yeah, we're watching all your moves with great interest. It is it's a lot of fun to see the, you know, we love the managerial search and the hire, and you've got a lot of interesting people joining the organization. We understand there's a lot of people that know a lot about the game, a lot of bright people that you guys are bringing in, and it's fun to see an influx of players. I grew up a Sox fan, and I love the team. Obviously, a rough year last year, but it's always tough to see somebody leave the organization, but you do feel like you got a pretty good return with now – I believe it is four of your top 14 prospects overall, according to MLB.com, came in that deal. So that is not just the two top-end guys, elite hitters in both their rights, but also you've got players galore. You got four bites at the apple there, and that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, no, thanks for saying all that. And listen, you know, it takes time. You know, a year ago I was talking about all these different ideas, and now, you know, you talk about Will Venable and others in the front office that have come aboard along with coaches and you know, even some free agents, where now we can actually point to some things and while they're around us and see us work together. And, you know, it's much more tangible, you know, from where we were a year ago. But, you know, when you make a decision like moving on from Garrett Crochet, certainly never easy. We're talking about a guy that Arrow, you know, certainly seems to be pointing up, one of the frontline guys, and certainly from a trade standpoint, top of the list for a lot of organizations. But you rewind back where we were a year ago with Garrett Crochet too, right? I mean, a guy that obviously very talented, had some injuries, you know, reliever, and then, you know, we put him as the opening day starter last year, and that's a testament to last offseason for him and the commitment. You know, the silver lining with a club like ours last year is we were going to be able to provide a runway, and he certainly took advantage of that. And, you know, when you make a move like this, you know, it certainly can change the course of the future. I mean, man, we feel really good about this return. And you know, I think what really led to us getting more comfortable as we're staring at names and doing all this research, we spent so much time on Braden Montgomery because he was the 2024 first round pick. He was we considered him in number five. Year prior, Kyle Teal, another first round pick. We spent a lot of time, you know, on him and with him. So from a talent and character standpoint, if you're going to rebuild an organization, really, you know, inject foundational pieces, I mean, gosh, the comfort level knowing that you know, we've been really doing deep dives on those individuals, it just really helped lead to a decision. And then to be able to fill it out, Chase Mydrop, one of the better, you know, minor league performers in baseball, kind of just quietly you look up and it continues to do it analytically, very strong both defensively and offensively. You look at his on-base numbers and they're absolutely through the roof, but there's versatility and just bat-to-ball skills. So we like that. We need that. And then Wilkerman Gonzalez is a guy that we've been talking about for years and potential deals. It's a big arm. We like this stuff. He's got starter potential and certainly, you know, could land, be an impactful arm in the bullpen someday too, after we exhaust the starting front. So, yeah, I mean, it's a diversified package. Three out of the four pitched or played in the upper double A or above, and you got an advanced college bat in Braden Montgomery. So, yeah, we're in a much better place than we were a couple days ago. And, yeah, I mean, it's a momentum builder. You know, the feedback from around the industry has been really positive. And, you know, now it's a matter of developing these guys and having them enter into the major league under the major league club at the appropriate time and support these guys the best we can.
There seems to be a consensus that you did get quality in terms of the return, Chris, and we heard you say that it accelerated the process. I'm curious how much that would be the case, especially when you talk about two guys specifically. Kyle Teal sounds like, you know, he might be ready to break camp with a major league club if he has a good spring training. I think you mentioned Mydroth, and some people have referred to him as the, you know, second baseman for 2025. Is that too accelerated? What are the expectations for those two guys specifically in terms of making this team out of Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mydroth for one. I mean, he had a full season at AAA, so, and he's touched a lot of spots, a lot of the steps along the way in the minor league level, and he's been very consistent. And you look at those types of offensive profiles historically, you know, he's well positioned. So, you know, we look forward to being around him in spring training. He'll definitely get a chance to crack our major league club. Kyle Teal, you know, he's got some time at AAA. you know, college kid, left-handed bat, you know, smart kid, makeup kid, you know, and has performed. So, you know, I candidly, I think he'll get a chance out of spring training too. If you know, there's other variables as well. You got Edgar Caro that is upper level, so we feel really good about the catching position. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when you make these, you're looking at potential deals. You don't want to get too caught up with proximity, especially, you know, when you're talking about a Garrett Crochet and this opportunity to inject real high ceiling talent. It just so happens these guys, you know, were so many of them were double A above, two at triple A knocking on the door. So, you know, it's really exciting on a lot of different levels. But yeah, these guys aren't far off. And then you go into the Colson Montgomerys and some of these other players and pitchers that we feel really good about. It's starting to take shape. It is. You can't rush these things. You don't want to force it. You know, even though it's as painful as you know, we all, you know, just enduring last year. I mean, it was really tough. But if we want to get this right, we've got to be patient. We got to be really sound in decision making and make sure these guys are ready. And we're just fortunate here that they're getting a lot closer. So it's exciting. It's an exciting time with the White Sox.
Chris, we talked to Jim Callis yesterday just about the prospects. He obviously does a great job digging through the background of all these guys, and he's seen them all play and everything. He told us that he believes you have the best collection of young catchers in Major League Baseball. And obviously you mentioned two of them there, Kyle Teal and of course, Edgar Cuero. And, you know, it was wild because you kind of said at the winter meeting that Cuero would have a chance to make the roster. He's a year younger than Teal. He's a Cuban player, so he's probably been playing longer. But, I you know, I don't know that. But I'm just curious, were you hesitant about getting another catcher because you had Cuero? Or do you need – this is an elite hitter. He's an elite hitter too. Do you need as many bats? And, you know, I know Teal's a lefty and Cuero's a switch hitter. Was there any hesitation about the fact that they play the same position, or do you like having a pair of young catchers?
I mean, I love having a pair of young catchers. I mean, I do. It's obviously such a vital position for a club. And, you know, what gets lost is, you know, the handling of the impact that it has on just a pitching staff, mm-hmm. a game plan. You know, it just really, you know, infiltrates a clubhouse when the catching position is right or wrong. So, you know, I don't think you can have enough, you know, talented catching. Now, with that being said, you got to diversify your roster and you want to balance it. Now, what I will say, just, you know, and this has been going on for a while, but certainly felt it, you know, this winter is the market for catching. I mean, it is absolute gold. I mean, teams are they're desperate for it. You look at, you know, some of the free agent contracts and the willingness to really seek young catchers because it's such a difficult position to find and to fill. So, you know, I feel very fortunate to have, you know, three really quality guys, because Corey Lee's a young catcher in this game that can really catch and throw, and you know, had, you know, spurts of being an up and coming, you know, everyday catcher type. So, you know, I don't want to scoff at what he's capable of doing. So, it's about injecting talent when you're in a rebuild. And, you know, Kyle Teal, left-handed bat, has been very productive. We liked his well-rounded offensive skill set. You know, he's tremendous athlete. I mean, he played outfield at UK. He can play infield. We love him as a catcher, but there's real versatility there as well, which is a big benefit. Edgar Caro, you know, he's stronger on the right side. So, you know, and he's still pretty good from the left side too. So, you know, that combo is really strong. There's versatility. It gives us a lot of options to improve our roster. It's one of those, like, I'm not going to get too caught up in the fact that we feel really good about Edgar and Corey. Kyle Teal's an upcoming top catcher in our game, top just overall player. So, let's get him in the system, see where it goes. More than anywhere, a lot better not only at that position, but organizationally after a move like moving Garrett Crochet with the return that we received.
Chris, people have a good understanding of where the White Sox are, and you've been pretty transparent of understanding how big the job is. Question, we were debating this morning with Luis Robert Jr. What's the play here? While you're on a roll, do you want to continue to take trade offers for him and consider unloading him now? Do you want him to rehabilitate or repair his swing? So with Ryan Fuller, the new director of hitting, so maybe by the deadline you get better offers? Or do you repair his swing, get him to the back to being the player he was, and extend his contract and make him a foundational piece? A lot of options with Luis Robert Jr. How should we look at it?
Yeah, I mean, you described it great right there, and that's why you got to be so careful with a player like Louis. You know, a year ago, coming off of his 2023 season, I mean, gosh, it was close to a 4-5 win player he was, and it was like, all right, are we just scratching the surface here? Unfortunately, you know, he got hurt the second week of the season because he's had a really solid spring training. He looked pretty good the first week in a multi-home run game. You know, he was spitting on pitches and having good at-bats, and unfortunately, had the hip flexor, injury that took him out for several months. And when he came back, you know, Louis, it was just playing catch-up, and he was putting so much pressure on himself to perform and make up for lost time, and it just snowballs. Baseball's too hard of a game to put undue pressure. But if you smooth out the front end of the year, be really intentional about, all right, we're looking at, you know, a full season here. And, you know, at its floor, just because of the defense and the base running and the power, you know, we're talking about an above average major league player. And that's without really even tapping into the bat consistently. And if he gets a smooth runway with the bat, it's like, all right, now we're kind of back to being that 4-5 win player, if not more. So, yeah, I mean, we got to get it right in the front end, and that's what makes them attractive to other clubs. But you want to make sure you're going about it the right way in terms of capturing, you know, not value for Louis, you know, like because he and you know, if it makes sense to move him, you do it, but you don't just do it for the sake of doing it because we're talking about a tremendous talent.
And not only did you get the four young guys, you got Mike Tauchman. We certainly watched him play with the Cubs. The Palatine Pounder, good that he's staying in town, and you brought in you had the first pick of the Rule 5 draft, and you brought in Shane Smith from Milwaukee. So now he'll be on the roster. Is he a starter? Is he a bullpen piece? Where are you at with those guys?
Well, Tauchman, you know, we're talking about a guy that talking about putting together an at bat, grinder. You know, a guy that Chicago's already, you know, witnessed what he's capable of doing because he's the local kid, but also did well with the Cubs very recently. You know, left-handed bat, can play all three. It was just, all right, we got a really mature approach, to the game, but in the box. It's like, we could use that. You know, we could obviously use that. So excited. And he wanted to come here, which is, you know, certainly nice to hear. And then, yes, Shane Smith, first pick in the Rule 5 draft. You know, our bench coach now, Walker McKinven, he's a guy that was in Milwaukee for a stretch of years, and so he has familiarity with Shane. But, you know, and I, with these selections, right, or when you have to make any of these acquisitions, it's rarely a consensus, you know, with your group. You know, there's so many different ways to analyze any acquisition, potential acquisition, and you know, it was a consensus for Shane to select him, whether it be Brian Bannister, just our R&D crew, our scouts, and certainly Walker with some familiarity. So we see him as a guy that certainly can start for us, but he also, you know, there's versatility in there. And when you're talking about a Rule 5 pick, and you know, these guys that, you know, when you take them, it can be difficult to navigate a year for a young player that, you know, sometimes hasn't even pitched a Triple-A. So the ability to go to the bullpen, make some starts, that can be really valuable in just navigating the year then to become kind of a normal rostered player the following year. But he's a guy that can make starts for us. And, you know, we want to protect a lot of these young pitchers, certainly protect Shane as well. as these guys kind of enter their first time at the major league level or second year. That's really important for us. So Shane, you know, we're happy to add him to the group.
So Chris, earlier in the show, Mully put me on the spot to come up with an impromptu White Sox lineup. It included two guys that I wonder what you think about their chances are of being in that lineup, maybe opening day. Colson Montgomery, I had at shortstop, and Miguel Vargas, who struggled mightily last year coming over from the Dodgers, at third base. Are those two guys part of the immediate plan in 2025?
Gosh, I hope so. You know, I say that, you know, Colson, you know, you look at the year last year, you know, he you look up and it was like, all right, his surface level numbers were different than what he had seen in the past, but the underlying was still pretty solid. And in the last 2 months, you know, he made some adjustments. There was freedom in the swing. There was aggression. And now we're like, okay, there we go. So he finished pretty strong at AAA, goes to the fall league, continues that. It was really about creating some momentum going into 2025 season. And I've told Colson, you know, and others that, you know, this kid, you know, he comes in and he's doing what he did at the end of last year. You know, he's on the 40-man roster now. I'm getting very comfortable with him potentially being on that opening day roster. Miguel Vargas comes over to trade. Historically, guy, you look through his minor league career, he's been a performer. He's done it even at the major league level. And, you know, came over here. He looked good defensively at third, which was great. Offensively, you know, he just never got going. And he didn't, you know, he's a guy that needed to add some strength. I think by the time we acquired him, he was just worn down, and then you've got the transition coming over in a trade in season. He'd been with L.A., you know, for his entire career. He's really focused on just getting stronger so he can make adjustments and really, you know, impact the baseball in the box. That's been the focus. Obviously, you bring in a Ryan Fuller, and, you know, you look for ways to provide the support that these hitters need, and Miguel in particular, because he does have some real offensive potential that can help us. So I think both those guys have a good chance. And whether we talk about some of the recent acquisitions in this trade, along with some others, you know, whether they're opening day, I know there's a tremendous, you know, focus and attention and sometimes obsession. And I tell players this all the time, you know, everyone gets caught up in making the opening day roster, and then, you know, day two, you know, you may not make the club, and then day two, you're on the club. So let's not, it's all about getting through, you know, get a bulk of that year in 2025 on that roster and being productive and getting your career going.
Chris, great stuff. Really appreciate your time. Just on the way out, you got to get what? This year's Eric Fetty. You got to make sure you get more players with a little history. How much more work is there to be done? You got plenty of time.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. I'd love to be able to find an Eric Fetty. yeah, no question about it. Those don't necessarily come every off season. But we're on the hunt. We're ready to pounce. You know, the beauty of doing a move like this, you know, let's say early in the off season, but earlier in the off season you position yourself to be a little bit more precise and understanding what your needs are. And the pool of players a greater pool of players are out there right now than there will be when you're knocking on the door of spring training. So a lot of work to be done. We've got a great group that helped me on the acquisition front. And, you know, we're ready to work and get things going.
Great stuff, Chris. Thanks a ton.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
That is Chris Getz, the general manager of the White Sox. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff there.
I thought he always had Fetty in his back pocket. Guys like that. Who is doing well in Korea, Dustin? Let's get a list.
Get a list.
All right. We've got Dan and Marshall next. Mully and Hall on the score.